Three of Hearts is a podcast of queer joy and silly laughs coupled with sad people and grave danger. Content warnings can be found in the episode description.
Previously on Three of Hearts. Agents Vellum and Felspar negotiated with Magnolia, their recurring foe. Magnolia agreed to give up their pursuit of the agents and inform them that Governor Thorne has set her sights on apprehending Jack in Stoneloft. This prompted Spar to want to leave Yue Liang as stat as possible. Before they left, the agents learned of tension within Yue Liang. Stoneloft has been unusually quiet, leading some to believe that the town is in distress, and one faction wants to take this chance to raid Stoneloft's library, while the other thinks it's too dangerous. The agents agreed to report back with news of what is happening in Stoneloft, stalling the planned attack and easing tensions for the time being.
Alright, goodbye everyone.
Okay. Previously. Nope, we did that already.
Oh shit, I'm tired. Okay, I got tired like
You could do it again. You could save future Jordan. You could save Jordan of like 6 weeks from now some real stress.
Never.
Okay. That's fine.
Fuck future Jordan.
Yeah. That's between you and yourself, actually. I have no business getting in between you.
Well, sometimes it does end up concerning you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm concerned about a lot of things, Jordan, so
all right. Okay. We are going to begin in the past.
Woo!
It's not spooky, I don't think.
It could be.
It could. Well, yeah, we'll find out, I guess, together. That's what collaborative storytelling is all about. All right. Ela.
Jordan.
When do you think this happened, that Vellum's friend betrayed Yue Liang?
Would this have been before his parents passed or after?
It's after. So I looked up our notes today. So yeah, we discussed that it was sometime Vellum is visiting, and so it's in the future sometime, presumably as an adult.
Okay.
Yes, the future past.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Three of Hearts, Days of Future Past.
What a weird fucky movie that was. I didn't know it was fucky.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So this, let's see, maybe he's either on a break from college, like a little spring break or whatever, or having recently graduated. I think it's before he starts Suits.
Okay. Which of those two things is it?
I think I kind of enjoy the picture of him being on a break from college and like riding his motorcycle out.
Hell yeah. We all love that image. nobody doesn't love that image.
Yeah.
Okay.
Ooh, another question for you.
Uh-huh.
Would this have been before or after they settled where they're at?
I think before. Because I think this event is why they decided to settle.
When you say they, you mean Yue Liang, not a person.
Sorry, yes. Mm-hmm. Not, yeah, Yue Liang.
Right.
Because Yue Liang was originally nomadic before it settled in its current clandestine location.
Cool.
That's an interesting question. I guess radio exists. So, like, is that, how does Vellum know where they are at any given time? Do they advertise that?
I was wondering that myself. Like, does he end up having to send letters out? Or, like, is there a secret message board where they post where they're traveling?
I don't think they're that secret yet.
I have a thought. Uh-huh. I have an idea.
Okay.
I wonder if there are, like, a group of folks if effectively you can sign up for a mailing list, right? Like, especially residents or people who, like the town knows Vellum. And so I wonder if whenever they stop, they send up effectively a postcard. And it's need is the postmark that tells you where they are. And like, maybe there's just like a date and it's addressed to somebody. Yeah. And like, it'd be, I think it's kind of, it would be sweet as a thing that like maybe Vellum collected those. And like, maybe you can tell who sent it based on the handwriting.
That's cute.
I like
so, and then I imagine like, I imagine it's not like thousands of people or anything. So it's just like a little ongoing collection that they just drop simple postcards in the mail wherever they stop.
Right. And I will say, like, I don't think it is super secretive yet. Like, at this time, Stoneloft knows they exist and they don't love it. But I don't think they're, like, actively being hunted because they are, like, a roaming library that, like, gives books to people.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, people know that that's a thing that they do, right? But I still love this idea. And I think that they send out, like, a yearly calendar of, like, what they expect to do. And then they send, like, monthly updates. And sometimes that includes, like, amendments to the calendar or whatever. So, yeah, Vellum is subscribed to UA Leung's newsletter, which is a wonderful thing that exists now. Thank you, SA.
And he's got a little album of the postcards.
Uh-huh. So there's a character I didn't get to introduce last time because I didn't find a place for it. His name is Wei Sheng. And he's a little pixie man who's like kind of the informal town leader before Qing Xiao was. And he's very odd. And he now runs, in the present day, he runs the Archive of Our Own, the traveling fanfiction library.
I thought Qing Xiao was running that.
No. Qing Xiao runs the proper library. Wei Sheng runs AO3.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
The improper library, if you will.
The improper library.
Bookmark that for an episode title. I don't know if it'll be this one, but the improper library. That's gold. The improper
library. That's really good.
So you said that was Wei Sheng?
Wei Sheng.
Mm-hmm. Can somebody spell that for me?
Weishang.
Thank you.
Yeah. It's the same as like Hua Cheng, where it's spelled E-N-G, but pronounced like a I guess it's the same as like Gaga.
So you receive, with every newsletter, one reason I brought up Weishang is that every newsletter also comes with a fanfic written by Weishang.
Beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a fanfic, like an original piece of characters? Is it about the series of romance novels that Vellum and Ipswich are fans
of? I think it's different every month, but it's always a different work that it is a riff on.
Okay.
Because, I mean, Duke's Best Man isn't the only series in the world.
Uh-huh.
So,
there's spin-offs of it, too.
Yeah, exactly right. Oh, shit. I don't remember if I gave it a name, but I was like a... In Tempest in the Teapot, Sorrel's reading like a vaguely Indiana Jones-esque series. I really don't think I name it. But anyway, this one is fan fiction for whatever that series is called.
Kentucky Friday.
Kentucky Friday.
Don't ask why, that's what came to my brain.
Okay, that's not the name of the series, but that is the name of the fanfic. And this is his OC in the series, Kentucky Friday.
Okay, good.
While we're still in the shitpost zone, I have a question.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Does Wei Sheng write the same tropes just in different fandoms every time? Like, it's always like enemies to lovers every time.
And yes, every single one is enemies to lovers.
And everybody's like, yeah, okay, we get it.
You've clearly got something going on that you haven't worked out yet with your rival.
He has a rival he's in love with. Oh my god.
Is it Qing Zhao?
No, they're not rivals.
Okay.
Maybe it's Gray. Who knows?
Oh, damn. See, Gray, you just need to put yourself out there and meet a new boo.
Yeah. Oh my god. Whew. This is the most off the rails and also productive we've been this early in the podcast ever.
Okay. One last. I can't promise it's the last, but one more tangent. I think that Spar and Gray are spiritual opposites in that Spar has no idea that he is several people's singular sworn enemy. Uh-huh. And Gray thinks that eight people are her sworn enemy. And they're just like, well, I mean, I don't like you, I guess. But like, I didn't think it was like that.
I think so, yeah. Okay, Vellum is at Yue Liang, probably, in the past.
Yes, okay. Vellum was subscribed to the newsletter, figured out where they were, and has shown up at Yue Liang.
Yeah. We'll say it's somewhere not too far outside of Silvala, so it's, like, somewhere that Vellum could reasonably get to in, like, spring break time, you know, like, get there, stay there a couple days, and go back. Oh, maybe they actually plan this around spring break just so that Vellum can visit.
Oh,
I think that's definitely the case.
That's cute.
Yeah. You're staring for a couple days. I have to imagine that this happens at night. What are you doing in Yue Liang? Which is really, like, right now, like a collection of tents and stuff. What are you doing that you're out and about in the evening?
I think Vellum is hanging out with Qing Zhao. Uh-huh. And maybe they're playing a drinking game. Maybe they're just shooting the shit, gossiping, filling each other in on what they've done the last few months. Mm-hmm. I think either way, he's spending some time with Qing Zhao.
Okay. At this time, the library is essentially like a series of wagons and like the actual book part of it, right? And like these wagons, like the sides of them open up and there's like shelves of books on display. Almost like a food truck, but for books. Can you flip me wit investigation?
Yes.
Okay.
Wit is 3, investigation is 2, 1 for healthy, 1 for eclectic. Unless I shouldn't do eclectic because that's today's stats.
No, it's fine. I don't deal with that. I refuse to deal with that.
That makes everything more complicated. Okay. Okay, that is a jack, 2 aces, and a king.
Holy shit.
4.
Okay. I think Qing Zhao is, like, showing off, because he's a huge fucking nerd, is showing off, like, new bookbinding tools that he's acquired. Ooh, or maybe Vellum brought him some?
Ooh. Because
Vellum's, like, an inventor, right? So,
yeah. Okay. What is it called? The thing that they talked about on that Mabim Bam Live... A bone folder.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I know what that does.
A bone folder, or folding bone, is a dull-edged hand tool used to fold and crease material in crafts such as bookbinding, card making, origami, and other paper crafts that require a sharp edge, a sharp crease, or fold. Mm-hmm. And I think they were originally made out of bone, so that's why they're called that.
You brought Qing Zhao, I think probably a non-bone folder.
It says on this little wiki stub that in Japan, the equivalent folding tool is traditionally made from bamboo.
Ooh.
So maybe it's made out of bamboo.
And yeah, so Qing Zhao is using it and remarking on the quality of it, and he thanks you for the gift. And at that time, with your how many successes? 4 or 5?
Or if we wanted to be really fancy, it could be made out of jade.
That is what I was thinking, yeah.
Whoa, I think it's got to be really fancy if Vellum's bringing it, if Rich Boy's bringing it. Okay.
Yeah, it's made out of a very pretty jade.
Lovely.
4 successes.
Okay. You're opposing 1 success, so you definitely beat that. And you hear in, like, the next cart over, like, the sound of, like, heavy footfalls. And it's otherwise really quiet this time of night. And... it's not necessarily unusual, like anyone's allowed to check out the books, but there's something like hurried about these footfalls that like sets Vellum's alarm bells off in his head.
Sets off the spidey sense?
Yeah.
Okay. The vibes are weird.
Mm-hmm.
Vellum holds his hand up to Qing Zhao, who is rambling about something, and goes, Did you hear that? It sounded like somebody was running away.
Qing Zhao is immediately figuring out if he can use this bone, this what is it? I already forgot what it's called.
Bone folder.
Bone folder. See, that was my thought, and then I lost. I doubted myself. He's immediately trying to figure out if he can use this bone folder as a weapon.
He can, but he might break or crack, which is maybe not a good idea.
Yeah, the whole point of a folder is that it's dull.
It's not going to cut anybody, yeah.
because you don't, yeah, because you don't want it to cut through the paper cardstock or whatever you're folding. You just want it to like create a hard edge, basically. It's like you know, like when you're trying to tear paper and you like pull it over the edge of your desk to have that like sharp edge. Mm-hmm. Similar idea. So you don't. He's gonna maybe scoop somebody's eye out with it. You'd have to get creative, but like I get, yeah, could.
He realizes it could that that's not a good plan. He sets the bone.
And you wouldn't want to damage the edge either, since that's the whole point, is to have a nice even edge.
So he puts the bone folder down, and he snuffs out a candle and grabs the candlestick. He's like, "All right, I'm armed."
All right.
He's ready to do a clue murder. What is Vellum doing?
Can Vellum also grab a impromptu weapon if needed?
Yeah, of course.
Do I need to flip for that?
No. What do you want to grab?
Okay, so hold on. He's an adult, so he should have his cane. He'll just pick up his cane.
Sweet. That makes sense to me.
Yeah.
So you exit the tent, or the wagon, and you see, leaving from the next wagon over, which I imagine they're kind of like side by side, but like hurriedly, basically running away, there is a halfling-sized figure holding a... No, I don't think... Yeah, he's hoisting a bag of books. Well, you don't know they're books, but presumably they're books. A large sack of books into a like a pony-drawn wagon. And you see that there's other bags of in the wagon, and then he's starting to mount the pony.
Vellum's gonna go for his motorcycle.
Whoa! Okay, yeah.
Motorcycle's probably gonna be able to catch up.
Yeah.
Even if the pony starts clip-clopping away.
I don't even think this is a flip, honestly. I mean, you catch up to the pony. Like... The person, like, panics and tries to get the pony to go faster, and, like, it's just clear. Like, they realize very quickly that it's not going to work out.
So Vellum does the thing where he, like, drives in front of where the pony would be traveling and makes the pony stop.
Yeah.
And then he dismounts his motorcycle and pulls out his cane sword. And approaches, is the person, like, in front of the cart, like, to steer the pony?
Yeah, they're sitting on the pony.
Okay. He's gonna point his cane sword at them.
So this person, they have a hood pulled over their head, and they draw, like, a short sword, and are pointing it back, and from off in the distance... A candlestick goes whirring through the night sky for three successes and hits this person on the back of the head, and they fall off their pony.
Dang, Ching Chow. Get him.
He goes, woo!
Nice throw. Okay, can Vellum sheathe his cane sword and work on, like, tying this guy up or...
I don't think you have to work that hard on it, and I don't know if you necessarily have rope on you, but I mean, sword went scattering out of his hands, like, and he's like pretty, dazed and like kind of putting his hands up at this point. He gets to a sitting position, the hood falls away, and you see your friend and fellow bookbinder, so fellow tome tender, Skylar Finch, a halfling with like, what, like reddish orange hair? Is that correct?
Yeah, kind of like a crimson red, not like a ginger orangey red.
Yeah, not like my spouse, but different, because my spouse's name is Crimson. Anyway,
subscribe to our Patreon for the deep lore about Jordan's spouse, who appears on our Vasa Obscura series, which turns out to be foundational knowledge. Give us a dollar, and you can know everything.
That's so true.
Learn the origins of the crocodilians and Skeletron and skulls and
so yeah, you see your friend Skylar Finch looking I was gonna say sheepish, but I don't think that's true. I think I'm pretty upset, like angry that he's been foiled.
And how long has it been since Velim has seen Skylar?
I mean, last time you've been in Yue Liang.
Okay.
Like, he is a resident of Yue Liang.
He hadn't turned coats that long ago.
No, this is the moment.
This is the moment. Okay.
This is the moment.
Velim's gonna look at Skylar and say, Skylar, what are you doing?
And Skylar, just like staring at Velim, says, this is all wrong. Everything about Yue Liang, the way we do things, it's wrong.
Why would you say that?
Because it's true. And finally, I have an opportunity to do something about it.
What's so wrong with sharing knowledge with everyone?
Not everyone is trustworthy.
That's certainly true, but is it our right to decide who is and who isn't trustworthy? Or who deserves to learn what knowledge we have?
What rights even matter when it comes to preservation of self and of everything? Think about... Look, I've felt this way for a long time, okay? But it just keeps happening. We took on some strangers last time we passed through Withervane, and they said they needed somewhere to stay. We offered our camp, and, you know, they absconded with one-of-a-kind texts about the history of the pixie village, the pixie, like, people in Silvala, and sold them, and no one knows where they are anymore. If we keep letting everyone access knowledge, we risk losing that knowledge forever. And I mean, think about, maybe this is fucked up of me to say, but think about what happened to your parents, okay? We let a stranger into our community, and she killed our two head tome tenders. And what if she had destroyed the library? Important knowledge gone. Yes, we have multiple copies of some books, but not all of them.
That's why we've been working on our printing press.
Yes.
It will take quite a bit of time and effort in order to make multiple copies of everything, but Velim sighs. What happened with my parents, to use that as a means to forward your mission? Velim is like clenching his fist and shaking a little bit. Like, he's clearly pissed off that, like, yeah, Skylar's upset about it in a different way, but he feels like Skylar is just using this as a reason to retaliate.
Mm-hmm. Skylar's like, you can be mad at me all you want. You have a right to be mad, but I have a right to be cautious, or not even cautious, but reactive. Not long ago, we lost magic. Okay? The world is chaotic, and it's going to keep getting worse.
So your solution is to limit everyone's knowledge?
Not everyone.
Just whoever you deem fit to wield it?
Not me. Okay? One of the archivists in Stoneloft is working with me, and I'm bringing these books to him.
This isn't what my parents would have wanted.
Okay. Well, are they going to stop me?
Ooh.
I will.
Yeah? Well, you'll be stopping my third delivery if you do.
Velim is clearly very emotionally compromised right now, and is trying not to, like, lash out in anger. Mm-hmm. But he really wants to punch Skylar right now.
And Skylar says, look, Callan, you won, okay? You've caught me. It's too risky to come back. I'm not doing this anymore. But I'm also not coming back here, which is probably what you want. So you can be all self-righteous and not let me get away with these books, if that's what you need. But Stoneloft is changing. And I don't think the new head librarian is going to let Yue Liang get away with its, well, existing for much longer. This civilization, this community was built on stealing from Stoneloft. How are you going to judge me for stealing back?
Vellum sighs. What happened? What changed? Why are you doing this? I thought...
I mean, it wasn't a snap decision, Callan. I've just watched people take advantage of us for so long.
So now you're taking advantage of us too.
No. I'm abandoning you.
Vellum clenches his jaw. Fine. Leave. And he'll take the sack of books and let go of Skylar so he can leave.
So there's a cart full of other books, of other sacks, and Ching Shao has now, like, arrived on the scene. And while you're talking to Skylar, he, like, unties the wagon from the pony and says, but we're keeping these.
Get out of here, Skylar, and if I ever see you again, I swear.
What?
I won't let you off easy. You've betrayed my trust and the trust that my parents had in you by doing this.
Flip presence persuasion to see how much this rattles Skylar.
Okay. 3 for presence, 2 for persuasion, 1 for healthy, 1 for eclectic. All right, we got a queen of clubs and a joker, so
one success and a joker. If you want to use drive, I'll let you reset and reshuffle before the present.
Sure.
Okay.
There's a jack. There's another jack. And nothing else. That's it. So 3 successes.
Okay. For 3 successes, you can tell that you've made a deep impact on Skylar. The Joker is, I think, that the kind of, like, self-righteous anger in Skylar's eyes, I think, leaves an impact on Vellum as well. There's definitely a thing of, like, this was my kind of friend, right? And it was your friend. And now it's like,
other than Gray, Skylar's probably the one person that's known Vellum most of his life.
Yeah. And so,
because I don't think Ching Zhao joins Yue Liang until maybe 10 years ago, 7 gotcha. Years ago.
Okay.
I think it was after Vellum had moved in with Gray.
Got it. Okay.
So I like that. He didn't meet Ching Zhao until he was like a teen.
Right. Okay. It's this person you've known all your life, and the idea that, like, somehow you never really knew them or no longer know what they're capable of doing, I think rattles you.
Mm-hmm. Cool, cool, cool.
And maybe echoes into the future if your relationship with someone else that you thought you knew, who you knew your whole life. Who can say?
Who can say?
Who can say? And that is where this flashback will end, and the Mitro will begin. Da-da-da-da. Thank you. redoing the Final Fantasy victory music.
I guess so. Maybe unintentionally, but yeah.
You solved my formative trauma puzzle.
Yay. That's this whole podcast, baby.
It's a podcast.
Welcome to the intro. My name is Jordan Quiverns. I'm your host, wingman, GM, and therapist. Not licensed, but practicing. And my pronouns are they, them.
We're here to help you get over your trauma and make new ones.
I have officially abandoned Twitter, the platform formerly known as Twitter. And I am on Blue Sky, which is all right. And I'm Jordan Quiverns on Blue Sky, if you have that one. It's kind of nice. There's only like 5 people on Blue Sky, which is really, really the good thing about it. So if you're one of the 4 other people on Blue Sky, hit me up.
You started to say what your pronouns were, and I think got cut off, maybe, or distracted.
My pronouns are they, Blue Sky.
Got it.
All right. My fact today is about Josepha. We're getting into hometown stuff. So this is a bunch of Josepha lore we're going to get right now. Josepha is from a part of the world that we have not ever talked about because I just thought of them recently. And I knew Josepha wasn't from any other places that we've talked about. She was raised in Stoneloft. She considers that her hometown. But she was born in a place called the Shattered Islands. But this fact is actually about Stoneloft and the Shattered Islands, because Stoneloft is home to the mainland's first bowling alley. And bowling was invented in the Shattered Islands. And Josepha never got to bowl as a very young child, but always thought it looked really fun. And so her favorite thing about her hometown of Stoneloft is that other immigrants from the Shattered Islands opened a bowling alley there. And she loved it. She was in a bowling league in her teens. Has not played much since as an adult because she's altered and she's super strong and she doesn't know how fair it is to bowl anymore. And unless she's against other like altered people, I guess.
I gotta imagine she set up at least like intramural level bowling, like pick up and play level bowling.
Yeah, sure. Heart, right? Aww, yeah, that's lovely. Yeah. Last thing I was going to say is, bowling has spread throughout the world post-war when the world started to get more, like, close together. But for a long time, bowling was, like, exclusive to, like, the Shattered Islands and Stoneloft. That's my fact.
Awesome. Good fact.
Thanks.
Hi, my name is Essay. I use she, her pronouns. I play Marin Felspar, who uses he, him pronouns.
You wouldn't know that from listening to this episode, but you do play Marin Felspar.
I do. I'm like that. I mean... That's fine. I'm happy. I'm having a good time. I play Marim Felspar, and I also consult on world building details. Contact me for my rates, which you can do on Tumblr at citrusandsalt.tumblr.com. By the time this comes out, I will have been on RTFM, Read the Fucking Manual, doing an episode on Blades in the Dark. It's a really good episode. Max and Aaron are very cool and very smart, and let me be very cool and smart with them. So go look that up. Drop a link in the description. And Merrim's fun fact for this episode.
Hold on.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
you can't call him Merrim. You can't call him Merrim.
I mean, you'll find I can't. I've known him his whole life.
Okay, go ahead.
I think even though he doesn't go back to him, home will always be the house he grew up in. Home will always be a sort of like sprawling, like adobe and wood timbered, like emotionally and physically warm space that's like lots of little pockets, right? Lots of rooms where you can be alone, but also lots of rooms means there's lots of people. And so in Vasa Natura, that's where he's from. We haven't been there in a while. Again, Vasa Natura, I think he and Sorrel both live in apartment complexes, which gets a little closer to the idea of like, yeah, home is where you have sort of one spot nestled in among many other people.
Aww, that's cute.
Yeah.
Good job. I want to... Spar's so cute.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. He's a good boy.
Good boy.
I'm going to pat myself on the back for doing the bare minimum. This was my first premeditated character fact in a long time.
Well done.
Usually I think of them on the spot, but I was like, I'm going to come up with
good one. Job.
Thank you. I was going to say also. Hold on. Go on my palace. Chronologically, because I think Kevin's episode would have come out before this.
I'm not sure about that.
Okay. Well, either it already happened or it's going to happen that we have another B-Team episode with Kevin Cole, and that will be the second episode of the show ever set in Voss and Natura.
Incredible. Wow.
Love it.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Love Voss and Natura. We'll love to go there one day.
Ela, you're on the show too.
Hey. This is Ela Alexi. You can find me online at Ela Alexi. I play Agent Cowlin Vellum, and he and I both use they and he pronouns. For the Agent Vellum fact today, his favorite part about his hometown of Yueliang is how it would travel to all these different places, and he got to really see a lot of the world. Which, you know, is a little bit bittersweet since it can't do that anymore.
Oh.
But at the same time, having a fixed residence makes it easier to visit. So There's some pros and cons for both.
Wei Sheng does still send you monthly fanfiction.
Oh. Whether you want it or not, there's no unsubscribe button.
And when you send him a letter to unsubscribe, he ignores it and puts it into the fireplace.
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to lose any readers.
He has a binder full of unsubscribe
letters.
Letters, which he wears as a badge of pride.
Okay, I'm getting strong Shang Qinghua vibes from Wei Sheng, and that means nothing to anyone that hasn't read Scum Villain. But if you have, at me, because Scum Villain is my jam and has been for like the last year and a half. It's all I can think about.
Wow. Well, I thank you for finding the brain power to do this podcast despite only being able to think about Scum Villain.
Yeah.
Holy shit, guys. We're almost on 2 years of this podcast.
I know.
Mm-hmm.
That's bananas.
So for context, the briefest description for Shang Qinghua's character is that he is the author of a web novel, and he gets sucked into the world of that web novel, and is just a trash gremlin. He's great, he's perfect, and he's horrible, and I love him.
Wonderful.
People usually draw him as a little hamster.
Aww.
It's very good.
In the present, so I assume we're on the road out of Yueliang because we want to get to Stoneloft. So I imagine we're driving Tomorrow's Problem. Yifal is driving, Josepha's navigating. It's very mountainous terrain here. It's a lot of windy roads, precarious, some of which have safety rails and some of which don't. So it's a little bit slower going because I think Yifal is not like flooring it in her advanced supercar like she was the rest of the trip. So it's going to take you probably until evening to get to Stoneloft. At one point, we take a bathroom/snack break, I think, and there was some interaction that SA wanted to have with Spar and Vellum. So this seems like a good time to do it.
Yeah. Also, Sora wanted to talk to Spar. I don't know if that temporally comes before or after this.
Ooh, that's a good question. We could do it before.
Because she said that it was a topic that was okay to discuss in the car.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, we'll do that first. Thank you for reminding me. Sorrel, on this windy, kind of tedious drive, Sorrel makes her way into the back seat with the boys, pretends to shield her eyes from any affection happening.
I think Spar is leaned up against the door, which has the child lock engaged, uh-huh. and sort of like pulls one knee up for Sorrel to stand on if she wants.
Aww. She does. I think she actually sits on it.
Mm-hmm.
And
serious talk, he says.
yeah, kind of. She says, yeah, it's a little serious. Actually, kind of a lot serious. But it's also, I don't know. So I've just been thinking about a lot of things. Obviously, a lot of them are about Mom, but some of them aren't about Mom. And I've just been thinking about how, look, I'm really proud of you for coming home and, you know, talking to Anya some and everything. And I know that's not all stuff that you, like, necessarily wanted to do, but I think that some of it is stuff that, like, maybe you needed to do. But I also wanted to say that, like, sometimes I know you're tough, Spar, but I also know that, like, you're fragile and you don't like to admit that. And so sometimes as your big sister, I feel like it's my job to protect you. And sometimes I forget to, like, take care of me. And so I want to do better about that. And one thing I want to do, even before I came on this trip, is to get out of my job at the governor's office. Now I double do. The thing that sucks is I was going to ask you about getting a job at Suits. And that's not currently on the table. But you are a connected person. And she points at Vellum and is like, and this guy is even more connected. And so I was hoping that you guys could help me, I don't know, put me somewhere I can use my brain. I think I sort of gave up on a lot of things when magic stopped existing. Or when we stopped being able to access it. And, like, I kind of figured I didn't really have a useful future anymore. But, like, you know, I'm still young. And, 40 in pixie years is, like, not 40 in the grand scheme of things. I don't know. I just, yeah, I guess that's it. Maybe we can form a private detective agency or something. And I can be your mysterious assistant, or you can be my mysterious assistant.
I think the second one.
Thank you.
I don't often get to play the femme fatale. And, you know, I think it'd be good. For me, sort of a career change.
Vellum raises his eyebrows.
Spar raises his eyebrows right back at Vellum.
Sol says this is a microaggression. and says, I think that, do you think that that's a thing you can put on your resume, like femme fatale as a job description?
I don't see why not.
It is a skill. Yeah, you do have to, you can be bad at it.
Yeah, that's true.
Tati.
I mean, she's good at the fatale, I'll tell you that. She's good at the fatale.
We both thought the same thing.
Yeah. I think Spar isn't going to pursue the conversation. There are things that he has feelings about that she said, but he is for what is going to happen out loud, right? Like, he's like, yeah, of course, we will. I don't know how this is all going to
shake out.
Yeah, but I think at the end of this, nobody in this car is gonna fit back in the place that they were in before, except Merafina. And
Merafina chuckles at that.
And of course
we'll figure it out.
Yeah, we'll find. Tell me, do you want to stay in Vasa Natura? Do you want to go to Clovenheart? Do you want to go somewhere else?
Yeah, I'll figure that one out. Let me think a little bit.
I think that's a good first step.
There's another thing too, and I'm trying to still figure this one out, and I just want to say it. Which is that I know we talked about Mayor Thorne and how I thought I was having memory problems because I didn't remember him. But that's actually not the only instance of memory problems that I've been having.
Runs in the family, I guess.
Yeah. So I guess I need to see a doctor or something. Anyway, this is really just me. I've just been bottling up problems for too long, and I'm just saying all of them right now. You don't have to solve them.
Essay's face is doing a thing. I think Spar, not solemnly, he's definitely trying to solve them.
Yeah.
And he's like, wait, Sora, wait, no, you gotta give us more details on the memory thing. Feels like it is likely to be relevant.
It feels benign, if I'm being honest. Like, as far as memory loss, it can be benign. Like, sometimes I just forget half of my workday. Or like, a day off where I'm like, I have plans to do. And then I think I just, like, sleep the whole day.
Have you noticed any particular pattern to this? Does it happen on certain days of the week or certain times of the day?
I think I've been in denial too much to really document it. But I think maybe I could work on that.
And let us know if it continues to happen outside of you being near Governor Thorne.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's interesting. Yeah, noted.
Well, thank you for telling me, Sorrel. Thank you for telling us.
And thank you for listening.
Destiny makes a little chirrup noise and...
Aww.
Nuzzles over near Spar's knee so that Sorrel can give her pets if she wishes.
Mm-hmm. Sorrel flutters off of Spar's knee and gives Destiny a little headbutt.
Yeah.
And
Spar sneezes.
It's true, he does. Sorrel says, thank you for listening to Vellum. I know our interactions have been strange, but I do consider you a friend.
I also consider you a friend.
Thank you. So yeah, that's what Sorrel had to say.
Cool and good. Love that. That's good, actually.
Everything's fine.
Yeah.
Everything's fine.
Yeah. Well, we can all agree about how things are fine. So yeah, now we can flash forward. Unless someone has something else to cover, we can go to that aforementioned rest stop.
How's Vellum doing on this car ride? What's he up to? What's he thinking about? And
yeah,
is he like chilling? Is he anxious?
Yes. It's one of those things where like you're traveling, and you can only get there so fast, no matter how you're traveling, and so he's just kind of like. Maybe tapping his fingers on his knee or, like, you know, trying to distract himself. But, like, he's trying to relax but failing spectacularly at it. Because he just wants to get there because he's so anxious and worried about what's going on.
Spar, noticing this, puts his legs on Vellum's lap to act as sort of like a weight. And will make up just stupid shit to ask Vellum about, pretending that it's, like, important to a problem that he's working on.
Is he asking, like, 20 questions to fill out Vellum's personnel file?
I think that would be cute, but Spar is also, like, a little occupied. And I don't think he would quite go to something that cute. Because I don't know that he would trust that that would work. And so he is flipping through his little detective notebook and asking Vellum questions about, like, hey, you remember that thing with the upside down tree in Withervane like 6 months back? Like, here are the details I have. Okay. But do you know these follow up things? Like, it doesn't fucking matter, right? Suits doesn't exist. It's not going to solve anything, but it's questions that ask Vellum to, like, focus in on, like, problem solving and things that are in the like core competency, right, of suits and investigating. Like that's where he's going.
And I think Vellum is successfully distracted by this, but is also wondering if part of this is Spar being worried about his own memory problems and if he's remembering everything about the cases. So I think Vellum also kind of encourages this sort of distraction because he thinks maybe proving that Spar is remembering correctly will help comfort Spar.
I don't think that Spar was thinking that consciously, but I do think that it does it does reassure him about something he didn't even really know that he was worried about.
Mm-hmm. Aww. That's so cute. I almost called for like some kind of MC flip for this, but I think it's just cute that what just happened, so.
So are we chased by any big birds this time, or?
No big birds.
Okay. Bears? Crocodiles?
No, kind of got the crocodile situation under control.
Timby?
No, he's too embarrassed.
Good. He has learned shame. Took him this long.
But what's this? Josepha was secretly Tatiana and just after your blood. No.
Oh no.
This keeps happening.
Oh yeah, I've already done Josepha. Alright. Now, so we get to our rest stop. And yeah, everyone's kind of chilling. Ishbala is stretching. Merafina is just like holding on to like a gnarled cane and like staring off over the cliffside distantly.
Spar is not going to interact with her portentous ass. Whatever omens she has, he is not interested in hearing them.
Amazing. Good.
I think Spar and Ishbala have like a set of car stretches that they probably do because they drive together. And so he helps her like stretch out her tail and then like she helps him balance to like make his back make horrible Rice Krispie noises.
Sorrel is just reading a book. A little pixie-sized book, and Josepha is writing something.
Vellum stretches, and Destiny does some little kitty stretches.
Aww.
Maybe runs around and sniffs some flowers.
Aw, for sure.
Chomps on a flower, just cause. Mm-hmm. Destiny sneezes.
Not Destiny sneezes.
So after everybody's, like, stretched and, like, folks have snacks and drinks, Spar's gonna wander up to Vellum and say, hey. Nope, not like that. He's gonna say, hey, Callan, you wanna...
Yeah?
Later. This is weird. I'm sorry. It's gonna sound weird. Will you try something for me?
Of course.
And Spar unsheathes his sword and holds it out for Vellum to take.
Vellum attempts to...
The euphemisms here.
Take the sword.
Oh man, my bangs are too long for my best eyebrow work. You'll just have to imagine it.
Thank you. I will. Yeah.
What happens?
Oh! Sorry. So you take it and Spar. In like the second before Vellum touches this sword, you have like an epiphany and a weird sensation in your tummy all at once.
Mm.
And the epiphany comes from recognizing the sensation. Mm. Spar, you've been close to a lot of people.
Mm. Eyebrow emoji.
And other than family, you can stop me if this seems incorrect, but I think other than family, there has been like a little barrier, maybe even with family, probably, there's been a little barrier to like giving yourself to them completely.
Definitely with family included, yeah.
Yeah. And sometimes with partners, friends, family, you have felt like a physical sensation. Like, this is a moment where I can give myself to this person in a way that I have never done with anyone before. Mm. And you feel that right now. What do you do?
Spar says yes. He says fuck it. He goes for it. He leans into it. He accepts it. He gives.
Okay. Wow. Vellum takes the sword and can hold it.
Oh.
And.
Because last time it just passed through his hands. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. A golden light.
Our bond has increased.
Oh, it sure has. A golden light erupts from Spar's chest and strikes Vellum in the chest. And it, like, Vellum gets, like, knocked on his ass. All attention is immediately on you two.
Spar's chest is like, sorry.
I think Vellum is shocked and surprised and is like, what? Are you okay? What happened?
Yeah.
Vellum, can you flip intelligence arcana?
Okay.
Actually, make that presence arcana.
Oh, okay. That's one card less. Okay, presence is 3. Arcana is 4. 1 for healthy, 1 for eclectic.
While Ela is flipping, I do want to, like, plant this flag that, like, for Spar, the difference isn't that they have been physically intimate, which, like, whatever sex looks like between them, whatever acts they have done, like, to the reader's imagination, right? But, like, we know definitely multiple times when they've been roused in the middle of the night, Spar ain't been wearing clothes. And it's, like, that's not it. Spar fucks.
Yeah, like, exactly.
But, like, there is a reading of their relationship, right? Where, like, Vellum couldn't hold the sword before and can now. And it's not that it's for him. I think for him, like, really the moment was when they prayed together. And that, like, that is a kind of intimacy that he...
Spar doesn't usually let other people see.
Yeah, that, like, even when he... I think it's a combination of, like, you know, I think sometimes... Like, he and Ishbala might observe together. But the combination of, like, all the weird god stuff that the two of them have been together and the absolute calm acceptance Vellum has had for all of it, I think that that is what makes him feel...
safe?
Able to throw himself, like, through this barrier in a way that, like... he isn't usually able.
And sorry, we'll get to Vellum slip in a second, but do you think it's safe to say also that, like, I could be wrong about this, like, we have talked about how Spar has had other partners we just have never talked about in, you know, in the show. But do you think it's safe to say that, like, maybe until Vellum, like maybe not since Anya, he's had, like, this particularly, like, intense of a relationship?
No, I don't think that's accurate. Okay. Okay. Like, when he was talking with Ishbala and he said, I'm never not in love. I think Spar falls in love easily.
It's always full-hearted.
Yeah, but there's a you can honestly and truly love people and still feel a barrier between yourself and them.
Yeah, for sure.
And so I think he has had relationships that were multiple years long, right? Like, I think he has had relationships that were could have headed towards, like, maybe marriage and cohabitation if Spar weren't so married to the job. He's had stuff like he and Jakob have like been friends plus benefits for like a long time and have like that kind of closeness. And he has had a whole spectrum of ways to be attached and ways to love and attached without love. Not so much the love without attachment. And I don't think what he feels for Vellum is different. I think it's that Vellum has had the opportunity to see him in situations that nobody else has. And
that
so
makes a lot of sense.
There's a, not just a, we've been through this together, but you have seen parts of me that I have not shown other people, not just because I don't feel like it, but also because other people haven't seen me, like, in the moments after my mortality was severely reduced.
Right, right.
And so, like, there's a...
I guess that's the reason that I called out Anya specifically, was that over years and years of friendship, she's probably the closest one to having seen you in, like, ways that you might not want to be seen. And also, mm-hmm. she's kind of a light mind reader.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, there is some of that. And also, like, some of that is, like, you know, when you're a kid, you're a kid. And so, like...
Right. That's the other distinction I was going to say. Being in an adult relationship is so much different than being in a youthful relationship.
Mm-hmm. And so I think that he has felt the possibility of that kind of closeness mm-hmm. with other people. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that he has had the kinds of experiences that push those barriers down. And it's sort of like, the barrier is down and he can choose whether to step across it or not. Whereas usually he mm-hmm. has to choose whether or not to dismantle the barrier.
Okay. Yula, how'd the flipping go?
I got 2 aces, a jack, and a joker.
Okay. This is a pretty funny and easy joker. Hey, Yula.
Yes?
If Vellum were to cast a spell right now, what would it be? Like, don't even overthink it. Like,
maybe like a detect magic, like to try to figure out what's going on.
Okay. All right.
Putting his detective and his magic mm-hmm. together into one.
Yep. Like that. Okay. So,
sorry, I have to interrupt with a shit post. And Spar is his magic detective. Wink emoji, wink emoji.
Okay. So, Vellum, you not only, like, feel what Spar just gave to you, you really feel what Spar just gave to you. Because for all intents and purposes, in the parlance of the podcast, Vellum is now tethered. Vellum has the capacity to cast magic. And as you're sort of fumbling with this and trying to cast a spell, you try to cast this detect magic, and instead you do a reverse detect magic, and you feel like...
What is a reverse detect magic?
You're about to find out.
The magic detects you.
Oh, no.
Not quite. You cast 3 spells. You got 3 successes, right? Sorry, I thought you see. Okay. You feel like everyone in like a 3-mile radius now knows that a spell was just cast in this area.
Oh, shit.
And that's what just happened.
We just had like a magic earthquake thing.
Yeah.
The vibes were sent out.
So definitely everyone in this little pit stop is like, holy fuck.
That was strange.
As gay love just produced a world-changing event.
Yeah, you know, like you do.
Mm-hmm.
As it often does.
Gay love saves today.
Yep. Spar holds his hand out to take back the sword so that he can help Vellum up without Vellum having to, like, put the sword in the dirt or, like, not have use of his hands.
Vellum hands it back over.
Yeah, so he sheathes it and helps Vellum up. Sorry. I didn't know what... Sorry. And he's, like, dusting Vellum off.
Vellum squeezes Spar's hand and says, no, it's fine. It's fine.
Yeah, it's fine. Spar can handle fine. Spar knows what to do with fine.
Are you feeling okay? Do you feel different?
Hard to tell. Everything sort of feels weird in the past. He checks his watch. Week and a half.
Since we went on this mission, yeah.
Yeah, so I can't really give you a firm read on that one.
You felt that sort of...
Yeah, the golden light.
Shockwave and...
Yeah. Mm-hmm, yeah, okay, yep. Okay. Yep. He feels the urge to shake Vellum's hand.
I mean, he can. Vellum is kind of dazed right now, honestly.
Yeah, I think that's like Spar's reflex for like, we have concluded an exchange. And then he like looks down at himself. It is like, sorry, I don't know. I'll be back in 5. And he like lets go. He like steadies Willem by the shoulders and then just like goes to take a beat.
Okay. I'll be here. Willem is just kind of looking down at his hands and at his chest where the golden light went, and he's like, huh. Does he feel like magic in the air around him, in him?
Yes. It's a feeling that like used to be very normal to everybody. And now you feel it again. Like, the world is charged around you. Like, you could... Like, it's one of the feelings that I don't think anyone in the world even realized they felt until it was gone. Mm-hmm. Where there was just sort of, like, this emptiness in the world after the untethering. And the world is full again. But just for Willem.
Like, when you have background noise that's like the refrigerator running, and then the power cuts out and it's just utterly silent.
But the opposite, but also more than that, it's like the world like looks more colorful to you now. Mm-hmm. You feel connection to the world in a way that you haven't in a long time.
Right. I was saying like that's what it was like when magic went away and you didn't notice the refrigerator running until
It was gone. Yes, completely. And like you, but like more importantly, like you just cast a spell. Like you could wave your hand the right way and say a word and like magic would happen. And that no one has been able to do that in 20 years.
Miss Merafina?
Merafina turns to look at you.
So many questions.
She says, for once, I find myself lacking in answers.
Okay. Willem is trying not to panic.
And she says, when I said magic was dying and you were perhaps its savior, I had no idea how correct I was.
Willem laughs hysterically a little bit. Cool. Great.
Sorrel just like, magic is dying?
Oh, poor Sorrel. Mm-hmm. What does Spar feel like vis-a-vis magic?
Exactly the same as he did before, except...
Okay. He doesn't feel any less.
You feel a little lighter.
Does it feel like when you accidentally static shock somebody?
Yeah, a bit, yeah. And hold on, let me think a little bit about what Spar is feeling, because...
Join me in the Spar's feelings pit. Mm-hmm. The company's good. The water's lovely.
Like, one thing you know, and that probably, like, Essay maybe realizes, is that, like, in your dream, the reason you are the last gold thread connected to the world is, like, this. This is what it was. Mm-hmm. You had in you the potential to share magic with somebody. Mm-hmm. But you had to give yourself completely to them. Mm-hmm. Beyond that, I don't think we know enough yet. There is more to be uncovered, but...
Thank you, Merafina.
You're welcome.
The My Little Pony logo comes up, and it says, gay love is magic.
There was a pony in this episode. Anyway, But you do feel really strongly, like, probably your dominant feeling right now isn't even about the magic stuff. It's about... realizing what happened emotionally between you and Willem. Like, you are physically aware of, like, how you just did something in your heart that you've never been able to do in your life. And I think that is, like, the dominant thing in Spar right now. Mm-hmm.
Does he feel, like, connected to Willem even after having walked away? Like, he can kind of...
Oh, yeah.
Got spidey sense of, like, Willem's over in that direction?
Yes.
If this were a video game, you'd have like a little like dot pinging for the correct the inset map.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I think Spar is physically shaking, and like he gets far enough away, and I think he sits down and cries. And it's not sadness; it's just overwhelm.
Is it okay if Sorrel approaches you?
Like the second he's aware, he is like done crying. There is no more crying.
Okay. But I think she would know you enough then to not approach.
Mm-hmm. He said he's taking 5. He'll be back in 5. Like,
yeah.
You know, he comes back and is still, like, visibly shaken and, like, has that look he's had very often in the past, like 10 days of like, well, that was fucked up. Not necessarily in a bad way, but in a like, what the fuck kind of way. And I think he looks over at Sorrel and he's devastated. He looks so guilty.
I've thought so much about this.
Is he feeling guilty because he feels like he should have been doing this with other people sooner?
If he had known he could give magic, he would have given it to Sorrel. Like Vellum, he doesn't even know. I don't know if Vellum even knows whether Vellum wants magic or not. But Spar knows that Sorrel does. And he feels gutted.
So Sorrel flips 3 successes to like really assess what's going on, both like in your face and in the like what's going on with Vellum. Can you flip me a presence empathy?
Sure.
With plus 1 because it's your sister. And you know her name.
I hope. I do know her name. Presence is 2. Empathy is 4, so that's 6. And I'm healthy, makes 7. Plus 1 makes 8. 3 of hearts.
That's the podcast.
Thank you. Plus 2 more successes for a total of 5 successes.
Wow. Okay. I didn't mean for this to be a little bit heavy and sad this moment, but I also didn't know it was going to happen right here. So, I mean, yeah, I think that, like, you feel guilt and Sorrel feels betrayed. And, like, you see that on her.
Oh, no.
He mouths at her, "I didn't know."
And she just looks at you and she, like there's tears welling up in her eyes. She kind of, like, looks back at her book.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he keeps his distance.
And I think, actually, Josepha goes over to Sorrel. And I think everyone has, like, an awkward feeling of, like, we shouldn't be here for whatever just happened between Spar and Vellum. And I think, like, I mean, Merafina doesn't care, but Ishvala gets back in the car.
I think Spar is leaning up against the car, so, like, he's close to Ishvala, but, like, not cutting himself off from Vellum. He's like, "So, take a good piss recently?"
Oh, sorry, that was to Ishvala?
That's to Ishvala, yeah.
She's like, "You know, I have. Thank you for asking."
Good, good. Glad to hear it.
"Are you okay?"
For purposes of the mission, yes.
You know that's not what I'm asking.
I don't even know how to answer. And he's like leaned up and like talking to Ishvala. He's, I think, like leaned close to the driver's side. She has the window down. And he's like looking at Vellum.
She looks at him too and looks back at Spar and says, "I mean, I do want to say I a little bit apologize for my line of questioning yesterday. But also, I do mean it, I guess. And now, more than ever, I hope you're doing the right thing for yourself."
He sort of looks sideways at her. And he says, "Ishvala, yesterday, you know when I said that I've never not been in love, you know I meant that I love you." That
she nods.
"You being on the field with me has put me in as much danger as Vellum being on the field with me will." That's not different.
She definitely, you can tell, had not considered it that way. And she nods and says, "Well, then I guess I just have to hope and believe that you're doing the right thing for yourself in a more personal way. A less bodily way."
He like pats her scaly arm a little bit. And is like looking back at Vellum again. And he says, "I don't think I don't think I fucked up. I would have chosen differently if I knew, I think. But this wasn't a mistake.
She nods and says, I just want to preface this with as little exposition as possible. I'll talk more about it another time. But Spar, you know that Ishbala cut ties with a lot of family members in order to join Suits.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll get into the details of that another time. But she says, Spar, I mean, this might be weird to say given some context of our relationship, but you're my brother in a lot of ways. And I'm here for you. And whatever you need, I just hope you know that. I might question you. I might call you stupid, but I'll always support you.
I think Spar nods. He's like, yeah, of course. Of course.
Mm-hmm. You should go talk to him.
Yeah. And he squeezes her forearm and goes over to Vellum.
She pats you on the back as you leave, out the window.
Spar offers Vellum a cigarette and is like, how you doing?
I'm fine.
Nope. Try again. How you doing?
I'm confused and curious and worried, but not feeling panicked.
Good.
How are you?
Spar, to talk to Vellum, has his back to Sorrel, so she can't see his face.
Uh-huh.
And I think instead of answering Vellum, he asks, how are we? I feel like what just happened is the sort of thing that shouldn't happen unless you tell someone what's going to happen and make sure they have informed consent. And I didn't fucking know. We could figure out how to undo it, I'm sure, if that's a thing that you...
No, it's fine. It's...
Spar gives him a look when he says it's fine. And,
no,
In Spar's look is, the uncertainty of knowing, what his relationship is with Vellum. And, not knowing if what he has done was wanted in any way. Or, if he is just, trapped Vellum in something that Vellum never wanted.
I didn't know this was possible, but if I'm being honest, I like it. I feel connected to you in a different way, and it feels like home. It feels safe.
And Spar clenches his jaw and looks away. And this is not an anger reaction. I think it looked like that to somebody who didn't know him.
Uh-huh.
But this is, I don't cry in front of other people, is what's happening.
Vellum reaches out a hand to Spar's arm to give it a squeeze.
What Spar wants, I think, is to be hugged, but he's not going to initiate it because he's in the, I feel like I just overstepped. I do not feel like I can initiate anything.
Uh-huh. I think Vellum went for the squeeze because he wasn't sure. Previously, we've had a few times when Vellum approached Spar and Spar flinched.
Mm.
So I think Vellum is trying to gauge his reaction by squeezing his arm first. How does Spar react to it?
Spar looks down at it, and I think he is slightly leaning toward Vellum. and like not making eye contact. But he's definitely not flinching and he's not moving away in any way.
Velm's going to pull him into an embrace and like put one hand on his back and one hand behind his head. Squeeze him against his chest.
Yeah, Spar fully buries his entire face in Velm's like chest, shoulder, and like is shaking. And I think he mumbles like into Velm's shirt. I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry.
Velm makes small shushing noises and says, don't be. I know it's, you can't control your feelings. You can't make yourself not feel sorry, but I am not sorry that this happened. And I don't want you to feel guilty about it having happened.
He kind of nods like against Velum's chest.
Velm kisses the top of his hair. It's okay.
Three of Hearts is S.A. Monik Tola as Agent Felspar and our primary editor, Ila Alexi as Agent Velm and our artist, and Jordan Quiverns as our host. We play a game called Space Kings, created by Kevin Cole and Super Tri Studios. You can purchase the game at spacekings.space. Our intro music is Dogtective. Our mintro theme is At Last, a Piano, and our outro is Ghost plus Guest. All of these tracks are by Louis Zong, and they can be found at louiszong.bandcamp.com. We also have a Patreon, which you can find at patreon.com/threeheartscast, all spelled out, that is T-H-R-E-E, heartscast. Support us for any price you can afford, and receive access to all perks, including gag reels, and to the opportunity to have an NPC named after you, as well as bonus episodes and written stories set in the world of our podcast. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back in 2 weeks.
Wow, what an episode.
Really? We really covered the entire spectrum of human emotions.
I know. We started so silly. Uh-huh. You know what would be really funny is to still call this episode The Improper Library.
I really want somebody to make make the Go Piss Girl meme with Ishbala.
Yeah, I agree.